I'd like you to meet a group of people who may very well lead you to believe that life begins at 80.
Jack Barry, creator of Life Begins at 80, presented by Mutual every week at the same time. It is our hope that during the next 30 minutes, our panel members, each of whom has reached the age of 80, will inspire, stimulate, and entertain you with their spontaneous reactions, opinions, and comments. Now, here to introduce our panel is Jack Barry.
Thank you, John Tannenbaker, and hello again, everybody. After having spent a short time with the members of our over 80 panel, I feel certain that the only thing to fear about old age is fear itself. And I hope that after hearing the transcribed reactions of our panel and the closing message from our consultant, the noted psychologist and author, Dr. George Lawton, you too will share this feeling. Now I'd like you to meet our panel members. First is Mrs. Eugenia Willard. How old are you, Mrs. Willard?
I'm on my way to 85 now.
Good enough. Don't make any stops. Next on our panel is Mr. Fred Stein. How old are you, Mr. Stein?
81.
Thank you. Visiting with us again, Mrs. Georgiana Carhart. How old are you, Mrs. Carhart?
84, and, well, if I live to next Saturday night, it'll be 4 months. So that's 84 and a quarter, isn't it?
I know you're going to live until next Saturday night.
I hope so.
And a good deal longer, too. Another representative on the distaff side is our ordained minister from the Unity Church in Brooklyn, Mrs. Ella Pomeroy. Mrs. Pomeroy, how old are you?
81 plus. Getting kidded.
And finally, to complete our panel as our special guest, one of the country's pioneers in beauty culture and one of the founders of famous Woodbury soap, Mr. William A. Woodbury. Mr. Woodbury, how old are you, sir?
2 days over 83 and a third.
Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. Now that we're acquainted with our over 80 panel, let's acquaint ourselves with Life Begins at 80. Listeners send in their problems for the advice and reaction of the panel. Essentially, that's the way it works, and for every letter which is read over the air, the sender receives a complete $250 set of 30 volumes of the Encyclopedia Americana. From Hyde Park, Massachusetts, comes this letter, sent by Mr. J.S.B., who will receive a complete set of the Encyclopedia Americana. Mr. B. tells us that every time I refuse to help my wife with the dishes or buy her a new dress, she pulls out one of my old love letters, which I deeply regret having written, and she reads it to me. In this particular letter, I vowed to be her slave for the rest of my life. I think she's taking unfair advantage of me. That letter was written when I was a carefree youth, not a tired businessman. What's your opinion? Mr. Stein?
You ought to get a hold of them letters and destroy them. Then she wouldn't be after them all the time. But I believe it's his duty to help his wife.
What do you think about this, Mrs. Willard?
What if he did write those letters? Why should she get out of anything in the past? Why don't she forget all that and live up to date? That's the foolish.
Mrs. Carhart?
She should have destroyed the love letters a long, long, long ago. Unless she wanted to keep them for ashes. You know, remembrance. You see, the Irishwoman, somebody came in and said, Maggie, what did Maggie have there in the end of the mantle? And you, well, she says, that's a new vase. Well, she says, now you have two of them. Now, what are you doing with two there? Well, she says, in this one, on this side, the remains of my first husband, Mr. McCafferty. And on this, my second husband, Mr. McGinnis. Glory be to heaven, she says. You've had a couple of husbands to burn, and I've had nary a one.
Talking about burning, the program's getting hotter. Mrs. Pomeroy, have you any constructive advice to offer poor Mr. J.S.B., who by this time is out of his mind?
In these modern days, when so many women and the men both work outside of the home, it seems fair enough for them to share the homework. However, that would be no excuse for her wanting him to assume a slave's attitude, because it seems to me if she were really a fine person, she wouldn't want to live with a slave.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Pomeroy. Mr. Woodbury, do you have an opinion on this domestic difficulty?
If I were in his place, I would forget what she says and think of the $8 a day I save when I do the housework when she's away.
I can see why you're one of the founders of Woodbury Soap. I'm glad we have Mr. Woodbury here. It's one way to assure us that tonight's program will be clean.
Mr. Barry, while there's life, there's soap.
Take care of that. Um, We've been talking here about these love letters. Mr. Stein, tell me, if you were young and carefree again, what would you do now that you didn't do then?
What would I do now that I didn't do then? Well, first place, what do I do now?
It takes you this long to get to it. It takes you this long to get to it. You're not going to do it at all, Mr. Stein.
Lost all power.
You put an impossible question. All of these years that Mr. Stein has been living have rendered him a quite different person from the person he was then, and he just can't imagine acting again as he acted then.
Well, let me put it this way, Mr. Stein, if I have the power to give you your youth now, how would you act?
Well, the first place, I'd save more money. Second place, I might marry again if I got a nice young girl with a little cash. You know, it's just as well. I have nothing to say against the poor, but it's just as well to marry, easy to marry a party with money. Somebody's got to have the money. Not the money.
Yes, Mrs. Willard?
You make me think of the two women that recently became very wealthy. They fell heir to some money, and they were walking down Park Avenue, and one said to the other, "Oh, darling, what time is it?" She looks at her wristwatch, and she said, "But it's just one ruby after one diamond."
I think we'll stay right with you, Mrs. Willard. Suppose you had your young, carefree days back. What would you do now that you didn't do then?
I always loved music and dancing, and that was the thing I always wanted to do, to go on the stage.
That'd be beautiful if you only want to see.
Now. You say the nicest things, Mr. Stein.
See the hat they got on here? Mrs. Connard, her hat hangs over 3 inches. She'd you'd have to take the hat off if anybody wanted to kiss her. Well, would you like to try it?
Mr. Stein is blushing right to the tip of his head. That is quite a creation you've got, Mrs. Carr.
Well, it's just new. This is just in from Paris, and I think it's emerald green. And it's really in just off the boat, you know. Remember? They say...
Maybe it's green because it's seasick.
Well, oh, I don't know what this is. This is to match my liver. Kissing. Mr. Stein, you know, talking about kissing. Well, perhaps it doesn't spread germs. It may not spread germs, but it certainly lowers resistance.
Mr. Connor, how about you? Suppose you had your young carefree days back. What would you do now that you didn't do then?
Well, I haven't stopped doing anything that I did when I was young. I don't know why all the applause. Everybody seems to know what I mean. I don't.
What about you, Mr. Woodbury?
Well, my experience has been that if I had to do again what I did before, I'd get up earlier in the morning, stay up later at night, and do it just like I did at that.
Now, fair enough, Mayor. I want to say that I don't think any of you who were on our panel tonight need ever try to be young and carefree. You're all young and carefree all the time. Yes, Miss Gard?
So there's no use regretting. So there was a married couple, and they had a darling, a little pig, and they kept fattening the pig and getting the pig ready for some special occasion. They were just going to have the pig nice and fat. One day, Mama said to Papa, she said, "Darling, you know, Thursday will be our 25th wedding anniversary. Let's kill the pig." He said, "Why kill a little innocent pig for something we did 25 years ago?"
Hearing about pig has something going.
I might as well get one of these jokes in.
Sure, go ahead.
Looks like the name is Mrs. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Stein.
Mr. Brown had a black eye.
Who is that, Mr. Brown? Had a black
Mr.
eye?
Mr. Brown. So Mr. Jones said, "How did you get the black eye?" "Well, you know, I'll tell you. My husband just got out of jail on his birthday. And I like a fool said, 'Happy return.'"
Well, now if we've covered all the old... Now that we've covered all the old Webber and Field jokes, we'll get on with the broadcast. Our next letter comes to us from Fort Thomas, Kentucky, sent by a Mr. H.B.R., who, of course, will receive a $250 set of the Encyclopedia Americana. Mr. R. wrote us that my wife is a member of a women's softball team, and during the summer, I have to do the dishes and sit with the baby three times a week while she's out playing with the team. She's a good player, but I think that when a woman has a family, it's time for her to hang up her gloves and pay more attention to her family. What do you think? It's time.
Can't the woman have a little time and recreation by herself? The old man, what's he going to do? He's a father. He can take care of the kids.
Very good. Yes, Mrs. Willard?
Well, I'm so surprised at Stein the way he speaks about the man. I'm amazed because as a rule, he always thinks the man should be in the house and be the gentleman and the wife do all the work. Thank you, Mr. Stein.
You two agree, and Mrs. McCarhart?
Likewise.
This is going to be a very short question. Mr. Woodbury, what do you think about this?
Most of my life, I thought it would be perfectly lovely to help around the kitchen or wherever there was any work to be done. But for some years past, I discovered that it was much better not to know how to do anything, and then you wouldn't have to do it.
How about you, Mrs. Pomeroy?
Our theories, our notions about playing fair fall down under stress. That woman may stay home all day, every day, 7 days a week, taking care of the baby. And in that case, why shouldn't she go out in the evening and leave a responsible person to take care of the child? Sounds fair enough.
Well, it seems to be agreed by all the members of the panel that this woman, if she doesn't overdo it, can certainly have a little recreation, such as her softball team. Now, Mr. Stein, I have a very important question to ask you, which arises because of the discussion about the softball team. Do you think that you would marry a woman who is physically stronger than you are?
No, it wouldn't make any difference to me, but I wouldn't want to marry her too big or too stout. Not me, but I weigh 164. I wouldn't want to marry. How old are you? How old are you, Wayne?
Way down to 180 now. He doesn't want to feed them, his wife.
175, you're all right. No, I wouldn't afford
it. I'm going to stop.
Mr. Stein, you don't mind if they're strong. You just don't want them stouter. All right. What about you, Mrs. Willard? Would you marry a man who was weaker than you?
Well, what's the difference whether they're strong or feeble? As long as they're your husband and you can love them and you can take care of them. Never mind their physical attraction because you never know what they are. They're married anyway.
Mr. Barry, you see, he talked about my size. He heard me say, you see, I've reduced from 218 pounds, and with this dress and hat on, I weigh about 181, and I want to be 175. So I made up my mind, you see, I haven't been able to have a girdle for 3 months. Now I'm going to wear a traffic girdle, you see? I'm going to wear a traffic girdle.
A traffic? What's
well,
a traffic girdle?
If I don't park it right, I'll get pinched.
Big mouth. Mr. Woodbury, to get to a conservative member of our panel for a moment and restore somewhat some semblance of decorum, Mr. Woodbury, would you marry a woman who is physically stronger than you?
I wouldn't let that stand in the way if I loved her.
Thank you. And how about you, Mrs. Pomeroy? How about a man weaker than yourself? Would it make any difference?
Yeah, I would at least want to marry a man who was quite healthy. Whether he was a Sandow in build and power, that would be no importance.
At any rate, it's very interesting to get your opinions on whether or not you'd marry a man or a woman physically weaker or stronger than you. Our guest today, Mr. William Woodbury, is one of the country's pioneers in beauty culture and one of the founders of famous Woodbury Soap. Mr. Woodbury, as an expert on beauty culture, can you tell us something about the beauty aids that women used 50 years ago?
Very few. And it wasn't, not only did they have very few to use, but it was against the ethics of anybody that was anybody to use such things so that it could be noticed.
Did they use face powder, for instance?
There was such a thing, but it was used behind the door.
How was it made?
Made out of raw rice.
Right.
And when a few people used it, only on their nose, which was shiny, or their chin, and only a few used it, and surreptitiously, no harm.
How about lipstick and rouge? That wasn't used at all.
That didn't come along until really in any great vogue until after the First War.
Uh-huh. Well, you were one of the first people to advocate the use of certain products, weren't you?
Yes, we made the face cream originally was white. We made it various colors and originated various excuses for their using it so that we could sell more.
I understand you were one of the first to advocate the use of vanishing cream.
In putting the rouge or powder on their face, we had to put some kind of cream. In the course of time, we had to get up a cream that disappeared. We called it disappearing. One day, your friend Mr. McFadden sent a couple of young men down to see me to find out what I would have to say about exercising the face to make it look better. While they were there, I was telling about this disappearing cream, but I missed the word disappearing. And I said, well, it vanishes. Well, one of them said, that would be a good name itself. That was 5 years before we used the word vanishing cream, and now it probably sells more than all the other creams put together.
Uh-huh. But you were also one of the first to advocate plastic surgery.
Dermatology was not popular in any of the medical schools. It was looked upon as against the laws of the world to cater to what they said was women's vanity. If they had a skin disease, there were doctors that knew something about what to do about it. But they could have crooked nose or projecting ears or wrinkles and things of that kind, and no doctor would stoop to suggest that anything could be done about it. I thought that it would be a good idea to correct those things.
You finally wrote a book then, didn't you?
I used the knowledge that I had acquired in getting up lessons on manicuring and facial massage and hairdressing and sold those lessons all over the country, several thousands of them. And after some 10 years of doing that, I then composed it into a book. That book went like wildfire.
But when did you finally retire actively from any sort of work?
Well, when I became 70, I concluded if I ever was going to have a vacation, I better take it. I had worked from 3 to 18 hours a day since I was 15.
Well, now you find yourself in your 83rd year of life. You're certainly a remarkable-looking man for that many years. How do you account for your wonderful physical condition?
I like candy as well as any child. I'll eat 3 pieces. Can't get another piece down the derrick. I have a good appetite. But I chew my food and exercise it and do things of that kind with the result that now in my 83rd year I could eat nails.
Well, Mr. Woodbury, whatever it was that you did, it certainly has paid off because here in your 83rd year of life, you look wonderful. I know you told me you feel wonderful. I want to thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on Life Begins at 80. Continue. Good luck to you. Thank you, Mr. William Woodbury.
Jack Barry and his juvenile jury return to the air over many of these mutual stations at the beginning of October. For 30 minutes packed with rocking laughs, make sure to hear Jack Barry and his juvenile jury. For exact day and time, consult your local newspaper. Incidentally, if you would like to attend a broadcast of Juvenile Jury here in New York City, drop a line to Mutual Broadcasting System, New York City, New York. For tickets to Juvenile Jury, write to Juvenile Jury, Mutual Broadcasting System, New York City, New York. Now back to Jack Barry.
Thank you, John. Let's get back to some more questions. Our next letter comes to us from a woman who is also a medical doctor. In order to conceal her identity because of professional reasons, we'll just say that she lives in Brooklyn, New York, which is a good place to conceal anybody. She'll, of course, receive a complete set of the Encyclopedia Americana. Here's what she writes. She says, I am a professional woman. In fact, I am a doctor. I'm planning a trip to a resort next month, and my friends have suggested that if I really want to have a good time, I should drop my title and travel as plain Miss or Mrs. They say that men are afraid of professional women and freeze up in their company. It would seem strange being called anything but doctor, but I wonder whether they're right. What do you think, Miss Stein?
Oh, no. She better keep it professional. You got it all, want to grab her. She's somebody. She's a noted woman. I think she better keep her title and have a good time that way.
All right, Mrs. Willard.
Well, I agree with Mr. Stein on that. In the olden days, we never had so many women doctors, and people were sort of weary about them because they didn't really understand that women could be physicians like they are nowadays. But now they have progressed so much in the world that I think people would love to have them, and she'd be very foolish to ever drop her title.
Thank you, Ms. Willard. Ms. Carhart?
Well, I think that men like women who make them think, but they keep away from them. And they're amused by women who make them laugh, and they like the girls who treat them rough, but to marry the women who flatter them, and it's very flattering to marry a doctor or somebody like that, you know.
What do you think about this, Mrs. Pomeroy?
Since this woman has established professional standing for herself, it probably sticks out all over her. And if she will confess openly that she is a doctor, a man at least would be put on notice. He could try it or not as he pleased.
Either that or she could wear a traffic girdle. Stop things from sticking out all over. Now, what do you think about this, Mr. Woodbury?
Well, when my business was new, I found when I went away anywhere home, abroad or anything, and they knew who I was on the boat, I was bothered to death, with the result that I went under another assumed name.
He used to call himself Campana.
A name, but other than that, nobody knew who I was. I could do as I find it, and really do as I like while I was on the way.
Well, now, do you people think that professional people are more reserved than other people? What do you think, Mrs. Willard?
I do not. I think they're the salt of the earth. I think they're wonderful people. I always love professional people.
What do you think, Mr. Stein?
Well, they are and they're not.
Thank you.
Some are not professional, very fine people. Some professional, not so very fine. I know one of the finest piano players in Jersey. He was a drunkard. He lived 4 miles from Morristown, went home 1 o'clock all night, and he found him dead along the road.
Well, what a recommendation for professional people. How about that fellow that you say was four miles from Morristown? They found him in the street? That fellow from Morristown?
Cold day. He walked 4 miles from Morristown to Whitney. Huh. He was found frozen to death along the road.
Maybe it's cold outside.
What was he doing walking 4 miles in the cold, Mr. Stein?
But he lived in Whitney, and he was drinking in Morristown.
So he got sinking from drinking, and then, why was he walking? Didn't he have a car or something?
Oh, them drunks don't have no money.
Well, I know several that do. I know several that are loaded. Well, where were we?
Well, Mr. Barry, that his wife was deaf. She didn't have to listen to the dumb.
What about you, Mrs. Carr? Do you think professional people are more reserved?
Well, I think they're perfectly charming, and they're uninhibited, you see. I mean, those who have any temperament. Just be natural and be yourself. And I think the stage is a wonderful place. But after Mr. Stein, shall I try to make my debut again?
Mr. Woodbury, do you think professional people are more reserved?
There are some persons as lawyers or doctors or ministers who are bothered to death by the people that want to pester them about this, that, or the other thing. Now, when they find that to be true, they can go around and be quiet about who they are. Ordinarily, I would say it's much better for the man to let on he's a doctor when he goes about, or a minister,
Well, let's ask a minister about that. Mrs. Pomeroy, do you find professional people more reserved?
I don't think that being reserved depends at all upon the business that one is in. Some people begin to talk as soon as they see another human being within 10 feet of them, and they talk all the time. And there are other people that you can hardly drag a word out of, and that I don't think has anything whatever to do with the line of their work.
Thank you, and I guess that just about sums it up. All right. In just just a moment. I have a most important announcement. Now, here is the consultant to our program, the eminent psychologist and author of Aging Successfully, Dr. George Lawton. Dr. Lawton.
I should like to present to you a list of rules for successful living for people of all ages. Here they are. Learn to accept what you cannot change, but first make very sure you cannot change it. Exercise, rest, and play every day. Avoid undue fatigue. Avoid these five useless emotions: self-pity, suspicion, envy, jealousy, and revenge. But instead, cultivate these three very important emotions: loyalty, courage, kindness. View facts apart from your own personal likes and dislikes. Be slow to make a decision, but once having made it, stick to it. Ask for advice, but let no one make up your mind for you. Do not ignore the unfortunate facts of life, but having seen them, choose to look at the good side. Is a glass of water half empty or half full? That's the difference between a pessimist and an optimist. Fear, anxiety, and worry will enter your life and may threaten to destroy you. But remember that the more you fight back, the more you reduce the chances of your being destroyed. Laugh more every day. But most of all, become a working part of something bigger and more lasting than you. There you have one man's creed for living successfully.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lawton. And heartiest thanks to our over 80 panel members for their stimulating contributions. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the last in the current series of Life Begins at 80 broadcasts. It is our plan to return soon to radio and perhaps to be seen also on television. You and our listening audience can help speed our return to radio by writing or wiring us about your feeling for the program. If you have enjoyed the programs and would like them to be resumed shortly, will you drop us a postcard, letter, or telegram telling us so? Send your postcards or your telegrams to me, Jack Barry, care of the Mutual Broadcasting System, New York City. We'd all appreciate hearing from you. Remember, if you've liked our programs, write or wire to me, care of the Mutual Broadcasting System, telling us how you feel about the show. My sincere appreciation to all of you panel members, to Dr. Lawton, for your earnest cooperation in presenting this series of broadcasts. Now, in closing, I'd like to borrow once again the beautiful sentiments of Julia Ward Howe, who said, of old age, when she was 90, all the sugar is at the bottom of the cup. Until we meet again, this is Jack Barry saying goodbye.
Life Begins at 80 was transcribed and was produced by Dan Ehrenreich. And remember, if you would like to attend a broadcast of Juvenile Jury here in New York City, drop us a line and tickets will be mailed promptly. The address is Juvenile Jury, Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. For tickets to the hilarious broadcast of Juvenile Jury, write to Juvenile Jury, Mutual Broadcasting System, New York, New York. John St. Leger speaking.